Hello. Please continue to enjoy your lunch. Wanted to let everyone know there are note cards on each table. If you have any questions for Mayor Franklin or Mayor Steele, please write your question out on the note card, hand it to our staff, and they'll bring it up to us, and we can ask the questions later. The past challenges for Atlanta's Mayor Franklin have been seemingly insurmountable. A $37 million deficit, a cloud of corruption at City Hall, and an archaic sewer system, racking up EPA fines of $20,000 a day. But that's all resolved. It's another new year for the mayor of Atlanta and the surrounding cities, and new challenges. Water, transportation, impact of more development, and proposed tax legislation are all critical issues that affect the future of our city and state. Here to discuss these challenges are the Honorable Shirley Franklin and our special guest, the Honorable Ken Steele, Mayor of Fayetteville. Mayor Steele is a retired Delta Airlines pilot, as well as the former Lieutenant Commander of the Navy. He's been involved in local government for more than two decades and is currently serving his third term as mayor. He's been a resident of Fayetteville for 30 years and has served on the board of the Georgia Municipal Association since 2002. Please join me in welcoming the mayors.
Mark, thank you very much. I don't know if water and sewer is resolved. So just for all of those of you who are going to the polls on February the 5th, in addition to exercising your right to vote in the presidential primaries and choose whomever you like, I hope that you will note that there is a referendum for the water and sewer sales tax. I'm sorry, Ken. I'm, you know, shameless. We're not resolved. We're midway 2007, and we expect to finish by 2014. I have already designated myself as the ceremonial pitcher today, and Ken Steele is going to be the John Schmoltz. He's going to bring it on home. So he's going to cover a lot of the tough stuff, but I wanted to just talk about some overall themes, which is for the first time in the United States and frankly in the world, most people live in cities. And cities are the economic engine, not just of Georgia, but most states in the United States. State government indeed has been our partner, as has the federal government. And what cities look for from other levels of government is partnership. And we are very hopeful that we can continue this very long partnership with the state in coming years. We believe that this partnership is the basis on which our economic health and growth has grown and expanded over certainly the last 50 years. We do have concerns, and each city has a slightly different concern depending on the year, but we do have concerns from time to time that people meddle in cities' business. You didn't laugh, but it's true. Atlanta, like most cities, wants to be a good partner, but we do have to protect the resources and the infrastructure and the economy and the way of life of our community. There are two issues that I'm going to address, and then Ken will come up and address several others. There is no question that water is an issue, and we want to thank you, the press club, for not serving water, but we are going to tell you tea is made with water, so you have to drink all of your tea. We have to ensure, if we're going to have a healthy city and state in 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years, that there is both high-quality water and water availability. And cities and utilities are charged with providing both. According to the Capital Needs Survey conducted by GMA, the Georgia Municipal Association, approximately $3.75 billion is needed for water and sewer infrastructure outside of what Atlanta is spending. So we need four, because this is '07 dollars. $4 billion in investment in water and sewer and stormwater infrastructure. And that is just for 190 cities across the state in that survey. Atlanta has an approved municipal option sales tax for our $3+ billion infrastructure improvement with water and sewer. The latest draft of the water plan calls for regional councils across the state to handle water planning, but it makes no provisions for appointment of elected officials, local elected officials, on those regional councils. Local governments and water authorities will be charged with implementing most of the water plan and will answer to the public for the success or failure of the regional water plans. Therefore, we believe that we need to have adequate representation on the councils. Now, you'll say, well, what difference does representation make? We live in a representative democracy, so we all understand that the voices of those most engaged are best served in the room when the decisions are made, especially if you want to have decisions that go unchallenged and where you're trying to build a greater consensus. So let there be no mistake, cities across Georgia, not just Atlanta, but nearly every city across Georgia is worried about water, water availability, water quality, enough quantity, and clearly cities like Atlanta and many cities in the metro area are addressing some of that with our own investment. Then, the issue that often gets discussed first, but of course you didn't think I would talk about it first, because you know I'm the sewer mayor. And I'm going to go down in history as a sewer mayor if I have to write the history myself. And at the press club, I might have to do that. I just might have to do that. I'm not mad with anybody, but I just want to make it clear that water and sewer is an issue. Transportation. According to GMA's Capital Needs Survey, cities report that more than $1 billion is needed to fund transportation improvements across the state. Cities would like to engage in a dialogue about a permanent and sustainable funding source for the region, for a regional transportation plan and plans across the state. GMA has floated the notion of Mobility Now in 2004 to jumpstart this dialogue. It's great to have a plan. Atlanta had a water plan, a water and sewer plan. But that wasn't going to satisfy Judge Thrash at the federal court, and certainly wasn't going to take care of Atlanta's water and sewer needs. Without resources, money, a steady source of money, plans are as good as the paper they're written on, which for reporters might be really good, but for the rest of us, are useless. So what we are coming forward to say, in unison with our brothers and sisters from across the state in GMA, that we would like to see a revenue source dedicated to local government transportation improvements. Now, I was with the commissioner of DOT a few minutes ago, and I know that she is working very hard to make an assessment of what is available and what the status is. And it would seem to me that if we, given some time, we can begin to have a different kind of dialogue at the state level. The gas tax is inadequate. It has restricted funding source. For me, it's, you know, if you're trying to do transportation and you only do roads, it's as bad as trying to do transportation and only doing sidewalks, or as bad as doing transportation and only doing rail. In Atlanta, if you're doing transportation and you do rail and you are doing buses, we believe you also need to do streetcars, because every great city, every great metropolitan area, every great town needs an integrated transportation plan and one that can be implemented. So we know the DOT has a huge backlog of projects without enough resources, but we are very, very hopeful that the new commissioner and the board is going to allow us to be a part of the conversation, and she says that she will, so we're going to give her that time to do her assessment. What are our strategies? Our strategies are to build a foundation for sustainable growth. As wonderful as life is for us today, it will not be this wonderful for generations to follow without that investment in infrastructure. What are our strategies to prepare for the new people who are coming to Georgia? How many of you were born in Atlanta or Georgia? This is, you get the picture, not many. And those of you who were born here, I don't know if you regret some days that you told us how wonderful it was, but the rest of us are really glad you welcomed us. And then finally, our charge at GMA as mayors and as local officials is to be sure that we are increasing the quality of life of the people who live within our jurisdictions, and that they have the possibility of passing on to their children and their children's children a better place to live, a peaceful place, a green place, a connected place, a prosperous place. We are delighted to be here, and please join me in a round of applause for Ken Steele, my colleague.
Well, thank you for inviting me here today. It's a pleasure to join you, and how about another round of applause for our good friend, Mayor Franklin. As I touch on some of the items today, I cannot emphasize that each community, whether it be county, school board, or city in the state of Georgia, has its unique needs. They're different, and we need to have the opportunity and the resources to meet the needs of our community as we deem fit, as we represent the people within our cities, counties, and the school board. I would say that hopefully the state legislature will pass meaningful legislation this year that will address our absolutely critical transportation and water needs, to build on what the mayor said. These bills must have mile markers and meaningful measurement tools to ensure progress. As was alluded to, we do an absolutely wonderful job of planning. My county has had a transportation plan on the books since 1996. It's a wonderful plan. But without the money to enact it, it is just that, it is a plan. We have been able to accomplish the first two items on our priority list, but local governments, cities, do not have the financial resources to meet our transportation needs in the state of Georgia. So we definitely need water and transportation legislation and a dedicated funding source if we're going to be successful in meeting our needs. Because of these needs, transportation, water, sewer, and all the other things, I have a great concern that when we come forward with legislation, if we don't have the funds, it's going to lead us to the vernacular, the unfunded mandates. The state government does not like unfunded mandates coming from the federal government. City and county and school boards don't like unfunded mandates coming from the state. But I see the possibility for that going forward. That's why I'm quite disturbed personally and concerned with the tax legislation that has been proposed in the state of Georgia. H.R. 900, the supposed great plan, has morphed so extensively over the past 10 months that it's difficult to discuss with any degree of certainty. Now, the cynics among us might suggest that that was probably intentional, but I'm an optimist, so I'll just say we don't have the facts to deal with at this time. What has not changed, however, are the end results of the tax proposals being put forth, and that is the erosion of the ability of local communities to address their needs, desires, and challenges in a manner that suits their unique environment. I ask the question, what is the role of state government? Mayor Franklin alluded to it, saying that we are in a partnership. We look to the state government, but for help and partnership to give us the ability and the resources to meet our local needs. State has one responsibility, and that is constitutionally to pass a budget each year. However, I think we can all agree that they have a role in the larger issues that we cannot deal with on the local level, i.e. water, sewer, transportation. I've personally asked the speaker why H.R. 900, and quite frankly, I have not received an answer. With all the imminent needs of our state, why are we bringing forward a tax policy at this time? So without an answer, we must rely on sound bites that we see in the press. One of them that I find that was made by the speaker was that, well, local governments just increase the tax assessments and the millage rate and spend wantonly, and our taxpayers are losing their homesteads and their homes at tax sales. Well, quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, that is not true. Local government has no impact whatsoever on tax assessments. Your local tax assessor has to comply with the state law. I won't go into the details, but let's say local government has no impact whatsoever on your assessments. So that is not a valid argument for H.R. 900. Another scenario bemoans the fact that Georgia has a low high school graduation rate. Anybody know what it is? Figure comes out to be somewhere, I hear, or read, 61%. So the H.R. 900, its proposal to address low graduation rates, is to take away property tax revenue from our school systems and basically double sales tax and send all the money to the state capital to be redistributed as they see fit to our school systems around the state. I don't know about you, but I cannot correlate increasing sales tax to high school graduation rates. I don't. There's a misconnect there. So that argument, I think, is spurious and does not work. State government should be our partner. They should take care of those responsibilities, legitimate responsibilities of the state governments. They should supply the resources needed by local government to meet our obligations. Local government is where the rubber meets the road. We have to comply with all the legislation, but when it comes to actually providing the service, it's provided by our cities, our counties, and our school boards. H.R. 900 initially was to cover cities, counties, and school boards. It's morphed to the point now that in the first year, it's only attacking the revenue sources of school boards. But it's a constitutional issue, and it will, in out years, it's proposed that what's happening to school boards this year will happen to counties and cities in the near future. So we'll lose our property tax, the most dependable, reliable source of revenue to provide local services. And to replace that revenue, it's the proposal is to pretty much double sales tax revenue, the least reliable source of revenue for local government. My community, we had our planning retreat on Tuesday. The economy is suffering some problems and distractions at this time. Our community, going over the revenue projections, our sales tax revenue year over year was down 16%. So today, sales tax revenue in my community is our number one source of revenue. So what H.R. 900 proposes to do is to take the reliable property tax, double the unreliable sales tax. So with our revenue down 16%, we planned on a 10% increase. So you can see the significant impact of a downturn in the economy. Fortunately, although we planned for a 10% increase, we only budgeted for a 5% increase because we plan ahead, and we're going to be able to pay our bills, obviously. But the point being, sales tax is not a reliable taxing source. Initially being used to fund school systems, I would say we have a serious difficulty or problem with that. Another argument that's been put forth, the assessment system is flawed. The Georgia Municipal Association, other responsible organizations, the Metro Chamber of Commerce, and a lot of other organizations in the past 4 or 5 years have asked for a blue ribbon committee of academics, government officials, CPAs, accountants, et cetera, to sit down and look at our tax structure. What are our responsibilities as government? What are we trying to accomplish? What are the potential revenue sources? Which ones would be best suited for the state of Georgia and our communities? Which are equitable and fair to our residents? So we support this. So we're not anti-reform, but reform is in the eye of the beholder. Somebody said a number of years ago that we ought to take the word reform out of the dictionary, because when it comes to the political experience, it means different things to different people. Just like change. Every non-incumbent wants a change, but the incumbents are pretty happy with what's going on. So it's all in the definition. We would like to sit down over time and take a look at our resources and how we can best utilize them. One thing that we would like to see happen, and that is efficiencies at the Georgia Department of Revenue. At this point in time, we do not know what revenue is available to the state. We all know we have a statewide sales tax, but quite frankly, we are firmly convinced that all the sales tax that should be collected are not, in fact, being collected. And we have proposed for a number of years something called point of sale. And this is that we would like to know, when you purchase something in our city or our county, is the sales tax being collected? At this point in time, DOR has no ability to determine whether all the sales tax due is in fact being collected. When they go out and do audits, I forget exactly what the percentage is, but they get an immediate 15 to 20% increase in submissions of sales tax. The states of Alabama and Mississippi a number of years ago went to point of sales. And we often say, if Alabama and Mississippi can do it, the state of Georgia sure should be able to do it. But when they did it, and that is when you purchase something. Right now, if you buy a lottery ticket, instantaneously the people downtown know that ticket number Umpty Dump has been purchased at Joe's convenience store. Instantaneously, they know that. DOR does not know that when you go out and buy a new dress at a department store, or you go out and buy many other items. So we think we should determine that we are getting everything that's due to the state at this time. When Alabama and Mississippi did it, the indications we have, they one generated 25% additional, and one got 27% additional revenue from their sales tax. To the state of Georgia, that would equate to approximately $1.2 billion a year additional revenue to the state coffers to meet some of the needs of our community. Our suggestion has been, let's collect the taxes that we already have laws on the books to collect, see where we are, and while that's transpiring, have our committee meetings and our blue ribbon panel to assess our overall tax strategy to keep it equitable for everyone within the state, and then make proposals to change the tax structure. We've put the cart before the horse. H.R. 900 has not defined the problem. What are they trying to solve with H.R. 900? And rhetorically, I would ask the question to you. What are they trying to do? It is not advertised as, and it is not a tax reduction. It's a shift of the tax burden from a reliable source to another source. who is going to be affected by the results of H.R. 900. Immediately, if you're a senior citizen or if you rent your home, it will be a dramatic increase in your tax burden, not necessarily your home, your apartment, or any other space. Many communities, I know in my city, in my county, regardless of your income, if you're over 65, you get a 50% tax break on school taxes. You do not pay them. And if your income is below a certain level, you pay no school taxes. So for renters and the seniors in the most parts of the state, H.R. 900 would precipitate an immediate and sometimes dramatic increase in the tax structure. We're activating AARP and the other people. They are part of our coalition of 15 different organizations that are working in opposition to H.R. 900. We can hit just a few highlights, and I won't amplify them on them too much as to what Monday's H.R. 900 was. Lamar, has it changed since Monday?
Nothing
has changed since Monday. Okay. What has not changed? The plan still removes local decision-making from elected officials. The plan imposes an artificial assessment cap on homestead properties. And I would ask for each and every one of you to reflect on assessment caps. Every state and community in the nation that has put on assessment caps or tax or caps on revenue has, within a very few years, experienced dramatic and disastrous financial results in their public sector. Every one of them. Colorado is trying to repeal a constitutional amendment that they passed 8 or 10 years ago, which has caused them great consternation. Prop 13 was used as the cause celeb out in California about property taxes. And I would argue with you that Prop 13 in California went from having arguably the best school system in the nation to today arguably one of the worst school systems in the nation. I will acknowledge, however, that they have other impediments and other problems. But Prop 13 was one of the initial causes to degrade their educational system. Plan still fails to address the lack of sales tax compliance. That's what I was talking about with the point of sale. And the plan still encourages mediocrity over excellence. One quote attributed to the speaker, I believe it was in a Dalton newspaper in July, was that it is our desire over time to take those school districts and communities that are beneath the median and bring them up to the median. That sounds good. Second part of the compound sentence read, and for those communities that are above the median, to slow them down. In quotes. That's unacceptable. And I think it points out to the problems with and the goals behind H.R. 900. The plan still forces one-size-fits-all formula. I've talked to several of our state legislators on this, and I said, well, how are you going to do it? And they say, well, we're working on a formula. There's not a formula out there, ladies and gentlemen, that fits the unique needs of my community, Atlanta, Snellville, Hiram, wherever you might live. There's not one out there. We are unique communities with unique people. We should have the resources available to us to make our local decisions. That's why I was elected to office. That's why Mayor Franklin was elected to office. If we don't have that ability, you have no need for mayors and city councilmen, county commissioners, or school boards. All you need is an accountant to take the money offered to you under some magic formula from Atlanta and disperse it to where it needs to go. So one size will never fit all. You're unique. You're special. And you should be treated that way by your local government. Okay, and it relies on, sales tax. Won't work. The plan is silent as to what redress cities, counties, and schools would have. Oh, this is really good for anybody from Detroit, Michigan, or the state of Michigan. If funding is inadequate, what happens in a downturn in the economy with the dependence on sales tax? What happens to the needs of your city, your school board, your county? The needs are this big, the revenue is this big. Who's not going to get theirs? State government? I don't think so. No, we're going to be shortchanged, our school boards, our counties, and our cities. I mean, there's empirical data, there's history to support that, and to think otherwise, I think, would be naive on our part. The proposed legislation calls for 15 categories of services that will now be subject to sales tax, one of them being food. And then there's a complex formula that will return the taxes received on food from low-income families, and the state would mail out some money, et cetera, et cetera. But of the 15 things, one of them is what is included in household services? The bill says household services. What's included in that? What are you now going to pay sales tax on? What are banking services? That's another item. What are you going to pay sales tax on at the bank? It doesn't give us any indication. What is meant by the acquisition of real property? You know, we pay sales tax on our cars when we buy them. We're going to pay sales tax on a house? I don't know. It doesn't say that. So, in conclusion, the plan would likely have a negative impact on renters, senior citizens, and I believe the entire state of Georgia. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have some questions from the audience. Powerful battery this time. For both mayors, given that most of Georgia's population lives in cities, why is it that the state legislature does so little to help Georgia cities?
Ken is coming too. This takes a twofer. I mean, I think the argument is that there's been a migration to cities across America, including Georgia. So I do think that there is a lapse, perhaps, in terms of public policy in looking at the needs of cities, because it has been a migration and it just didn't happen overnight. And frankly, I mean, if you want to get on the 6 o'clock news or be on the front page of the newspaper, there's a real easy way to do it. You bash Atlanta in some form or fashion. I'm not saying that the newspapers do that. I'm saying someone holds a press conference and they start talking about something that happened in the city or town, and all of a sudden they get a lot of attention. So, I mean, those of us who run for office, name recognition is part of what makes the world go round. So, I mean, those are two thoughts about it. Ken is probably a lot more articulate on this subject.
I would really think that it's not an anti. In working with the various state agencies, we have a great deal of success and a willingness of the state personnel to be proactive and helpful to us in the cities. There are this many needs and this much revenue, so we as local elected officials have to realize that we're not going to get help on every issue that we want. We have to compete for it and make a case for the needs of our city that are so much or so good that you just can't help but support us. And that's what eventually, after a lot of arm twisting and things like this, with the most or the municipal option sales tax that Atlanta got to help deal with their sewer issues and their sewer problems. And I would say to you that rather than taking away revenue sources, as they're proposing, we should expand the options available to our communities. I would love to have a municipal option sales tax, as Mayor Franklin does. My problems are not as severe. But if you want tax reduction and benefits, et cetera, if my community had a most municipal option sales tax, I could totally do away with property tax and could make that commitment forever and ever. Because we are the commercial retail base of our county, we have a sales tax base available to us. But if it was a statewide law, I bet not more than 25% of the cities in the state would avail themselves because they don't have as good a commercial retail base as we do. So I think there are also some control freaks.
Well, it's a complex question. Yeah. And there's there are a lot of answers, but those are a couple of...
What role, if any, will desalination play as a solution to Atlanta's as well as Georgia's water crisis?
Well, I have no idea. I've been an advocate for looking at water alternatives. I think lots of members of GMA are, certainly along the coast. I know I've talked to mayors who are interested in looking at water source alternatives. I would hope that sometime in the near future we would have the kind of studies that are taking place in California, Texas, and Florida around these water alternatives. I mean, we do need water alternatives. But in the meantime, drink all of your D. I'm going to make a correction. The Water Council on Tuesday passed a water plan, and it amended it to include local government representatives. So hear. We were heard.
Mayor Franklin, do you have a favorite candidate to succeed you as mayor?
I'm not in the business of endorsing candidates. This week. The truth of the matter is, I told a reporter yesterday, someone was trying to get me to do something, a press event. I said, I've learned enough about the media that you don't step on your own stories. And indeed, I had a State of the City this week. I then went to the Kiwanis, then I gave a presentation on the great tax plan. No, come on up. It's all right. I'm not going to say anything bad. And then today I did another address, and today I'm with reporters, so you're just going to have to wait. The thing is, when you got a good story going, you don't get in the way of your own good story. And I'll tell you how significant that is. CNN was doing a story on the King Papers. And Anderson Cooper called my office, and Beverly Isom will tell you that I did this, and said, we really need to interview on X, Y, and Z. So Beverly came in. She said, this is national. It's Anderson Cooper. I said, no way. We already got a great story that's national. I'm not stepping on my own good news. So we got good news this week, and we'll just wait for another day. But I do see Lisa Borders and Caesar Mitchell, council members, and I saw Mary Norwood, who are from the Atlanta City Council, and all of them have great ideas about what will happen next, and I will watch from my rocking chair.
What's your strategy for working with state officials who are bickering with each other?
Bake a cake, I don't know. Bake a cake, everybody. Have everybody to tea. I don't know. We're going to try everything, aren't we, Ken? I mean, we're going to try everything. I mean, we're going to use innovation, creativity, humor. We're just going to do everything. Everything we can think of. We are ready to be partners. Ken, myself, Bill, Mickey, all the mayors, all the county officials, the local officials, school board members, Eric. Wilson is here, and there are probably other local officials here. Can the local officials stand up? We got a couple of mayors. Yes, please. See there? We've got plenty with us today. We're going to do everything we can think of. Is that good enough?
Sure.
Okay.
Why did you endorse Senator Obama for president?
Oh, my gracious. I told you why. He earned my support. I went into this race not interested in anyone, thinking that it would play out in other people, and then I was just moved emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually by his courage, his smartness, his experience, and his willingness to try something that people don't try, which is to talk to folk who don't want to talk to you, and to listen to folks who don't want to hear you, and then to have an opportunity to offer his vision. Now, that's more than you should have given me time to say. And all the other candidates, because in my State of the City, I named Huckabee. Governor Huckabee is doing something phenomenal. McCain and Clinton. My personal choice is Obama, but my real choice is that everyone here will vote for who you believe in.
Wait, don't go anywhere. Mayor Franklin, a questioner wants to know if you would accept the vice president position on a Democratic or a Republican.
Well, you know, people get confused about me. My family was divided. My father was a Republican. My mother was a Democrat. My father was an elected Republican in Philadelphia. He was a good friend of Senator Spector's. He and Senator Spector are the only two Republicans who carried the city of Philadelphia when they ran for office. So I have great respect for Republicans. But I also have great respect for the Democratic Party, and I am personally a Democrat. So don't get me in a box and think you know which way I'm going to go, because you should know by now, right? That I could go anywhere. But I love Atlanta. I love Atlanta, and I'll be here and I'll be watching. I have absolutely no interest in any other elected office. Unless Ken wants me down there with him. Not to run. I just want to be in the pub. You know, my dream job is to go to the ARC meeting and speak at the public session. So when they come up with things, I'm going to be, my dream job is to go and say, you know, I have an idea. I'm stepping down.
What's the status of the transportation aspect of the Beltline project? And what about city bike lanes?
The Beltline is a great project. It's a 25-year project started by Kathy Woolard, who hounded me for 2 years to pay attention to it. After 2 years, we did an assessment. We're fully on board. The city of Atlanta has passed a tax allocation district. Those tax allocation district legislation is something that's important to other cities around the state. In places like Chicago, it's known as a TIF. Tax increment financing. It's a wonderful way for cities to invest in parts of their community that are not funded. It's not just something Atlanta can do. And we didn't invent it. I mean, we actually are copying it and imitating it. But the Beltline tax allocation district designation has been challenged, and is before the Georgia Supreme Court. And once that ruling is made, we obviously are confident that we're going to win, but you never know. But indeed, we expect that we'll be able to continue our acquisition of land for both transit and bikeways, green space. But in the meantime, without that designation, the city has put nearly $100 million forward into that project in the last 2 years. And we've raised in the private sector over $25 million for acquisition projects. We've bought a quarry, the Vulcan Quarry. So we will have, you know, there's a lot of talk about reservoirs. We've got one. Fortunately, Fulton County sold the city that. So we're really excited about it. The Beltline will be a transformative project for Atlanta. We are on the front end of it. And we believe the stronger Atlanta is, the stronger Georgia is. But we also believe Georgia and the towns and cities of Georgia make us stronger. So the reason I've been so active at GMA is two reasons. Number one, Maynard Jackson gave me four pieces of advice after I ran for office and won. And one of them was that I had to be active in Georgia Municipal Association, that I had no choice. That Atlanta was connected to the rest of the state. And the second is I got to meet great people like Mickey and Bill and Ken, and we have so much in common that it has been a resource for Atlanta to grow and get better. That's not your question, but, you know, when you're in politics, you just take the mic.
Mayor Steele.
If I could just add on to what the mayor just said, because I'm from out in the burgs. However, we're very much in favor of the Beltline, the communities out in the suburbs. It is just going to be fantastic for the city of Atlanta. But it also plays into, and you folks can be of help, it also plays into the possible legislation this year is, and that is when we deal with water, sewer, and transportation, we streamline the process. Now, she's in court. They're confident of success, so they're able to go forward a little bit. But, and everybody is entitled to their day in court, but it should not take us 7 years or 10 years. My community just got approval for a reservoir that they've been working on for 30 years. 30 years. It's unacceptable. We can do better than that. So everybody has their day in court. Everybody has the opportunity to express their interest. But we must compress the time frame because we are wasting the limited revenue and resources of our public sector. A perfect example, I got a grant in 1999 for a bicycle pedestrian path, $300,000 if it was going to be for 2 miles. You know when that was built? We're walking on it today. It finished August 2007. And that $300,000 that we had in 1999, the contract price was $870,000. My grant money didn't go up, but we reduced the size of what we were going to have a bicycle pedestrian path by over 50%. We must streamline our processes.
Mayor Steele, do you really think that cities, counties, and local elected officials across watersheds will be able to come together to plan for a regional cross-jurisdictional watershed plan? How can that happen in Georgia?
I think we can, and I think we have to. The drought has only brought to the forefront the needs. Many of us involved in the community over time have recognized the fact that water has been the primary long-term need of the state of Georgia if we're going to continue our growth and have a viable economy. So I think what we need are pragmatic leaders. They're looking for results. If there's enough credit to go around for all successes, and of course, failure is an orphan. But I think we have enough qualified, involved leaders that, yes, we can do it. And this proposal that came forward on Tuesday ties it more to our watersheds, our drainage basins.
Okay.
And I would only add to that that there are lots of examples around America, around the country, where multiple states, along the Mississippi, there are up to 5 states that have reached agreements. We have every reason to set the bar high and say that we will not settle for anything less than cooperation along watersheds.
In light of the region's ongoing drought, what kind of impact are you seeing, Mayor Franklin, on Atlanta's important tourism and convention business? What are you telling potential investors about the city's long-term plans to deal with water shortages? And what kind of conservation measures, including rationing, may possibly be asked of visitors and residents, as well as city services?
Well, I'd like to say that not just the city of Atlanta, but most of the jurisdictions in North Georgia have been successful in conservation and meeting the governor's mandate of a 10% decrease. I know the city of Atlanta has. I've read that Fulton County has. Most of the jurisdictions are putting conservation at the top of their list. So from my standpoint, conservation is first and foremost, quickly followed by investment, upgrading the water systems, being sure that we're not wasting any water, that we are, Atlanta is a perfect example of that. You know the story. If you go in downtown Atlanta where we are, some of the water lines, the drinking water lines, were laid in the 1800s and early 1900s. So it is inconceivable that they're not leaking, but they're, 100 feet down, so we don't see it. I know you see leaking above the ground, and everyone gets hysterical. How could we waste all this water? I said, you have no idea how much water is wasted. It's mostly underground. So we do want you to call us. But we believe our models show across the region, the North Georgia region, and we've been working with Sam Olens and others. We believe that if we put in conservation, if we are successful in our negotiations led by the state of Georgia, the governor and the commissioner, if we are successful in those negotiations with water supply in and out of the Chattahoochee with the Fish and Wildlife and the Army Corps of Engineers, then we would have enough water supply given normal rain levels. You hear all these maybes, for 30 to 40 years. Now, 30 to 40 years is not enough. The Atlanta airport is over 80 years old. So we need to plan at least 30 or 40 years. And I believe once we pass this very critical period, the next thing for us to do is to really look at long-range planning, which goes back to one of your earlier questions, whether it's desal or water cooperative agreements across state lines.
What's the impact, though, on the tourism and convention?
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, the biggest impact on, I'm guessing, okay? This is a guess. You can print it if you want to. I am guessing that the economy and the flat economy, the problems in the mortgage, just general problems with the economy, the cost of the war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the rising cost of oil is having a greater impact on tourism and travel than a conversation about water at this point. But over time, that may not be the case. As the economy comes back up, chances are that if we do not have adequate water supplies, that we will suffer. But that is purely a guess. Could be wrong, could be right. If it's right, I'm just lucky.
With the upcoming elections on Super Tuesday later on this year, what are your key issues that will be impacted at the local level with a new administration at the federal level?
Can you go first? I can go on forever on this.
I don't know that I really have anything to say about that. I'm a Republican. just so we balance the comments here. I don't really, just as I was talking earlier about the state government should be in partnership with local governments and give us the opportunity and the resources to meet our local needs in the manner that our people want it, I think the federal government should be doing the same thing, being a partner with the states and local governments, not getting into our business and not micromanaging, but providing the resources for us on the local level to meet our needs. The federal government has a different responsibility, and that's basically national defense and international affairs, et cetera.
Good answer.
You have anything to add to that?
Well, I got plenty to add, but I mean, that's a great answer, which is we're looking for partnership at the federal government. If Mayor Daley was here or Mayor Bloomberg, just as Ken and myself and others, we would all say the same thing. We'd like a partner at the federal level. It doesn't matter what party you are, we are all looking for partnership. I have a list of issues. Another mayor may have a list of issues, but obviously we want investment in infrastructure. I'd like to be Boston. Boston got $16 billion in federal funds to solve some of their infrastructure problems. I don't think there's a mayor here who would not like some of those resources. We need a transportation plan. We need a national energy plan. We need a national immigration plan. Don't get me started. But the bottom line is we have to look to the federal government for some of that leadership. When cities are cherry-picked, as wonderful as Boston is, when they're cherry-picked and they suck up all of the resources, that really doesn't help the rest of the country grow. So I would hope that as a result of the elections, not just Super Tuesday, but in November, that we would find a new level of partnership at the federal level on some of the issues I've named, and I'm sure your favorite issue as well. Public education is another.
Okay, we'll try one more question. With your goals, this is for Mayor Franklin also, with your goals for building a foundation for sustainable growth in Atlanta and to increase the quality of life for residents, will you share any specific goals for the economic empowerment of women in our city?
Sure. The city of Atlanta has had one of the most aggressive programs for opening business and employment opportunities to women and minorities over the last 30 years. As a matter of fact, Maynard Jackson and the leaders who were with him at the time, both black and white, charted a course that resulted in a change in federal policy. And that federal policy has allowed for the development of small and medium-sized businesses, the majority of whom are not African American, Latino American, or Asian American, the majority of whom are owned and operated, grow and prosper, are owned and operated by white women. So what started out as a program targeting an inner city population that was predominantly African American actually has opened the doors for literally tens of thousands of businesses. That is the kind of thing that can happen at the local level. That is what each of us in our own communities are trying to do, build these sorts of models. Atlanta's model is a model in business and employment that really is unparalleled in most American cities, and most mayors would tell you that around the country. Having said that, the question then becomes, what do you do about the people who are still left behind? And there are still large pockets of poverty in every American city. In Atlanta, the poverty level is close to 25%. And that's women and children. It tends to be older women and children. One of the greatest challenges that I face as mayor, and likely future generations will face, is how do you crack that problem? I have chosen to take on the issue of transition from high school to college as a way to do that, or technical school. So I have adopted a program where my goal is that 100% of the graduating seniors, whether it's 61% or 56%, whatever the number is, that 100% of those students every single year in the city of Atlanta will have options beyond high school. They'll have workforce options, training options, college options, and technical school options. I am not from the school of pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I did not pull myself up by my bootstraps. My parents and my community made opportunities available for me to get an education. And I am committed to break through the poverty problems by opening the doors of opportunity wider than they've ever been. And when you open them, you have got to have the resources to get in. Not only can't you have to be able to matriculate, you also have to be able to pay the bills for the books. And don't get me started. I got story after story after story, just trust me, of students who can get accepted to state schools in this state and do not have enough money for books because the Hope Scholarship gives you $300 from books. Wonderful. But the University of Georgia, it costs $1,200. Trust me, a year. And also that you can get admitted to the University of Georgia because on merit, and have enough money for tuition because it's covered by your Hope Scholarship, and have no place to live because you cannot afford the room and board. There is one student there right now who is in her second year, and she came to me and said, forget the board, just pay for my room, and I will eat crackers to go to college. She's right there right now. She's a sophomore in the state of Georgia. It's not a question as to whether she qualifies. So somehow or another, we have to upgrade our investment in education. Otherwise, our children will suffer, and our children's children will suffer because there'll be high rates of crime, there will not be global competitiveness, etc. America misses it when it does not invest in education 100% of what students need. I know you're sorry you asked.
Thank you, Mayor Franklin and Mayor Steele. We hope to see you all at an upcoming Press Club Newsmaker Luncheon. That concludes our program.